DC Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hale, author, natural health expert, producer.
I'm T.C. Hale.
What's up, T.C.?
I have homework.
Oh, for me?
For the listeners.
Oh, good. Oh, I'm sure everybody loves homework.
Your homework assignment for this episode is go to kickitinthenuts.com/movie, and there you'll find a link to our Kickstarter campaign, and you should share it on Facebook so that you can help us and you can be a hometown hero.
Or you could also give some money. I mean, yeah, if you have an extra $1,000 lying around, just throw it at around. Us.
Or you can get a DVD, or there's lots of cool perks and stuff that you can have, kind of be a part of what's going on and be one of the cool kids. But if you have like 80 cents, then sharing it is just as awesome, because somebody else will have, you know, want to donate and stuff like that.
And one of those perks is going to be you and Will cooking for somebody in your underwear.
No, but one of them is that we come to your gym or wellness center and teach a workshop on nutrition.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, what if they live in Australia?
Yeah.
It's only U.S.
Oh. Aww.
Unless they want to pay for us to come to Australia, and then we're not scared. We'll go to Australia.
All right, cool. And that lovely voice you hear to my left, although you can't see me, is Will Hottie Patati Schmidt. How you doing, Will?
Good.
Will had a birthday last week and forgot to tell us because he knew we'd spank him.
I was too busy doing all the reference work for our cookbook.
Yeah. Oh, cookbook. Exciting. Oh, we got plugs out the cows in the day, huh?
Mm-hmm. Audiobook is out probably right now. As this is being played, I bet the Kick Your Fat in the Nuts audiobook is out, and then cookbook later in the year. We're rocking
the
house.
I have a movie coming out in 7 days that's coming on video and demand. No, it's called Platinum.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be on a lot of things, Hulu, all that stuff. So look for Platinum.
Cool. Are you stripping in it?
Hmm?
You stripping?
I'm stripping, yeah.
That's what she does best.
Cool. Yeah, you know, me and a pole. We get along. We're all fancy now. The show's brought to you today by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook. Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
You know, I actually got it since we started that, and I've listened to like 5 books already this month.
That's awesome.
So cool.
Yeah, so if you get the free trial and you get a free book download, you can get Kick Your Fat in the Nuts for free. So you can just be sneaky that way. By listening to our show, you get free stuff from Audible.
Oh, that's
they don't even know that you're ripping them off.
And if you haven't followed us on Facebook, what the defugality? You need to follow us right now. It's Kick It in the Nuts. That's where we're going to post all the topics that you hear in the podcast that we'll be doing in future shows. I can't talk. And we'll try to answer any question that you have.
We got a lot of questions about autoimmune stuff.
Mm-hmm. And someone even asked me to cook for them.
So that was like a demand. So you can post questions and demands on Facebook
exactly.
when we put up topics. We usually put them up on Sunday afternoon-ish. So you can go check us out on Sunday and see what the topic is and be like, I got a question on that.
Mm-hmm. So after church, check us out on Facebook. And so you heard the topic is autoimmune. And what is that?
I don't know.
What does that mean, autoimmune?
They make up some stuff and then they just tell us and then that's what we go with. Autoimmune. Boom.
Okay.
Defined.
Idiopathic autoimmune.
Yeah, that's a fancier term.
Oh, wow.
I think this is one of those where we should kind of just get right into questions, because some of the initial questions will kind of help us break down what we want to talk about. But just keep in mind that, you know, when you look at the immune system of the body, it's really complicated. It's got, like, parts and all this stuff. And my opinion is that nobody understands how it works. Not any human being really understands how it's working. So we just need to kind of accept that, okay, we don't know everything that's going on, but we can kind of get some pictures and some ideas and some clues. And that's what we'll try to work with today. We'll just try to give you a different view than is so in your face out in the mainstream right now about autoimmune, because autoimmune has been kind of becoming a buzzword. Well, they'll just... they'll attach it to everything that they don't understand. Well, it must be autoimmune. And I just don't view it that way at all. So
I think I called it audioimmune.
That's probably not
something different.
Yeah, that's probably not
so accurate. Autoimmune. Okay. All right, so we'll just dive into questions. Keely from Los Angeles, California. Why do autoimmune issues seem to be rising so drastically lately? There you go. You were just talking about that. Everybody's throwing out that buzzword.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of a few things. I think that they're considering more and more issues to be autoimmune, even though, in our opinion, they're not necessarily autoimmune. Sometimes they're appropriate immune responses, and we'll have Will break that down in a second. But first, another issue is that our food is kind of turning to garbage. It's kind of turning into just something to chew on. A lot of what we're eating doesn't have real nutrients in it, and it also has a lot of other junk in it that's causing an immune response in the body. And we're looking at all these issues like the body is attacking itself, but the reality is that sometimes the body is going to war, and maybe the damage can happen to the body as an effect of that war that is going on in the body against other things. So I think to understand a lot of immune issues, you first need to understand food sensitivities and leaky gut issues and an inability to digest things, and explain all that now, Will Schmidt.
In addition to what you said, I think there is an increased compromise to our immune system that's occurring for multiple reasons. One being the lack of nutrition in our food. Like, we're missing all sorts of trace minerals and nutrients that used to help keep our immune system strong. We also know that a big part of our immune system is the health of our gut flora, and that is being bombarded by tons of different things.
Like, if it's not being completely wiped out by antibiotics.
Yeah, if you actually took an antibiotic, done, boom, nuked the whole population.
But
if you're also eating foods that have antibiotics in them, because that's how they were grown, or pesticides.
Like eating a chicken that took antibiotics? Yeah,
have that in you. It's been medically or clinically studied to show that, it does transfer over to you, as well as eating plants that have a lot of pesticides on them will kill the flora in your gut as well. And there's also some studies about what's called hygiene theory, where we're brought up in such protective, sterile environments that our immune system doesn't get to get tested against microbes, which is critical to the development of our more mature adult immune system.
Right. Like, when we were kids, it was a lot different than it is now. Parents are very protective a lot of times, and the kids getting a alcohol wipe on their face every 18 seconds or so, where as we were kids, we would be we'd be shoved out in the backyard, and our parents wouldn't care if we showed up again until it was dinner time, and we'd be out there rolling in the mud,
walking around with shoes off all day long.
Painting pictures on the walls with dog poop. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were really doing stupid stuff, but it was giving our immune system a chance to be okay, I got to fix this problem so I can be more strong and able to function against other problems too.
Yeah, and I remember reading this one study where they looked at the gut flora of some kid in Pakistan, after 3 weeks of being alive, versus a kid in Sweden who was completely white glove protected in the hospital. And the gut flora of the kid in Pakistan was just teeming, super abundant. And the kid in Sweden was there's almost no flora present at all because he's eating all the sterilized
food. Let's get
food.
Back to being dirty.
Right. So the practice of hand washing, of course, it's helped prevent a lot of infectious diseases. Sometimes we go too far in that, and it really is a detriment to the development of our immune system.
Right. So a lot of times, you see the kid pick up a grasshopper and put it in his mouth, and maybe you don't freak out so fast. But, so I think that can be one issue, but a really big one has to be all the antibiotics that are in the food now, and that's just like us taking antibiotics, which antibiotics don't just wipe out the bad bugs. They wipe out all our good gut flora too, which is there to help our immune system function.
Yeah.
So if the immune system can't function, then the body has to go to other sources. And a lot of those backup plans that it has can cause damage to the body and be viewed as an autoimmune type situation. But let's talk a little bit about what happens to food when it doesn't get digested, and how, if it seeps into the bloodstream, the effects that can have and all that.
Yeah, sure. So a lot of them will just show up as perceived as like toxic invaders, pathogens, antigens that the immune system will then create an appropriate response to, of like trying to neutralize those toxins, whether it's through like the multiple levels of the different white blood cell reactions that occur, which create a lot of free radicals on purpose to try to oxidize and destroy the perceived pathogens, which cause a lot of inflammation. In addition to those, foods no longer provide nutrition, which create
if they're more, not broken down correctly.
Right. So then you got your nutrient deficiencies to go along with that, which messes up metabolic responses and the immune response also.
Right. So what our body uses is not, you know, a lemon meringue quiche or a peanut butter sandwich or anything like that. It doesn't use those things. It uses vitamins, minerals, fats, amino acids.
Everybody's different, though. Maybe there's one person out there
who sells run on lemon meringue.
Cells thrive on peanut butter sandwiches.
Where's the lemon meringue? Where
is it? But it would like be having a car that could run on crude oil. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
So what the digestive process is it's turning the food into these elemental nutrients that our body can use. But if we're not doing that, and a lot of people don't have their digestion working correctly, then those food particles still being food and having a food identity can get into the bloodstream, and then the body attacks them.
So everybody's digestion has stopped working because of processed food and things like that. Do you think that's what
I think it can be a factor, but there's so many factors. Think about the fact that, you know, reflux, heartburn, all those medications, that's a $1 billion industry. I mean, so you think about all the people that are using those meds, and every single one of those people are turning off their stomach acid, which is turning off their ability to break down food properly. So that's a big chunk of people.
But they started on the meds because they had acid reflux, so that their digestion was already messed up.
Already not doing optimally, right, but they've gone and turned it off now. So, you know, the body needs minerals to create HCl. We talk about that in a lot of shows. We have two-part series on digestive issues, and we have another one on reflux. So you can learn more about those there. But since the food that we're eating has such a lower level of nutrients in it, the body isn't getting all the minerals it needs so that it can make that HCl, and that can be affecting a lot of people's digestion too. Mm-hmm. So we kind of look at it as, well, if we can eat a food and we don't die, then we're not allergic to it. But if we're not breaking down the food, that's a problem. And then there are a lot of foods that are more problematic for more people, and especially if they're not broken down, then other foods are, like things like grains and legumes and dairy and stuff like that. So when we eat these foods and we can't break them down or process them properly, a lot of times they can damage that gut lining, and then even more junk can get into the bloodstream and cause problems. So what we see is that a lot of these autoimmune issues are not really a situation of the immune system just deciding to attack the body for the hell of it. It's the body is smarter than that. I just don't think that it does that in very many situations. But the body could, and organs could be damaged from the body going to war against these food particles that are getting into the bloodstream where they should not be.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people find that they're autoimmune. I'm doing air quotes now.
I love it when he does that.
Do you like those? I like them. A lot of these autoimmune issues can be improved by someone either fixing their digestion so that they can break down food properly, or removing the foods that are causing the problems. And the most common ones are all grains, legumes, and dairy. And then there's also a lot of people have issues with nightshade vegetables. Some nuts and seeds, and even eggs. And I'm a big fan of eggs. Eggs are a perfect food, but they can be problematic for a lot of people with autoimmune issues. So what a lot of people are doing now, especially in the paleo community, which I'm a fan of, and if you don't know, the way I eat is pretty close to paleo, and we just didn't know it until later. But a lot of people use a paleo autoimmune protocol where they're just, for a month, they'll remove all the commonly problematic foods. And I talk about this in Kick Your Fat in the Nuts in Chapter 9, too. And they'll do this for a month. And we find that it works a lot better if you're also fixing digestive issues. And we teach you how to. We have a free 4-week digestive course on kickitinthenuts.com so you can learn how to, if you have digestive problems, and if you do, how to fix them. But we find that if you fix digestion and remove these foods for a month, then you can reintroduce them one at a time to see if your body kind of goes to war and has a autoimmune or allergic type reaction. And then you know that you may need to remove that food. But you can find answers for yourself, and you can improve a lot of these issues that people are looking at like, sorry about your luck, we got nothing. We gave you this drug, it didn't work, and so sorry. And that's kind of the answers that a lot of people are getting, so that kind of sucks. But a lot of people are finding answers by removing the trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
There's some other factors out there that can also be responsible for...
Yeah, enzymes, and talk about some stuff that you learned from Graham.
Right. So, yeah, enzymes are big. If you don't have the correct enzymes to break down particular foods, that can cause a problem, and supplementing with those correct enzymes can solve it, like lactose and lactase. Like mm-hmm. when people aren't generating lactase, they usually have big problems with dairy, and as soon as they try a supplement with lactase, all of a sudden they can eat it. Or also, fermented foods can help create the right kind of flora in your gut that create lactase, which is another sort of more holistic way to go about correcting that lactose intolerance. And then you're just generating lactase on your own because the flora will perpetuate in your gut.
You know, something interesting that someone was talking about last week is that a lot of pregnant women that are lactose intolerant will find that during pregnancy, they can do fine on dairy, and it's not a problem.
Okay.
And as soon as they're not pregnant anymore, dairy screws them up. And what I found, because that like kind of freaked me out, is I found that the placenta makes a lot of enzymes because, you know, a baby needs those enzymes to be built into a human being.
Is that why people eat their placenta?
Yeah, you do hear about that a lot, that there's a lot of stuff in there. And I haven't fried one up myself or anything.
Yeah,
but
no.
But while a woman is pregnant, they're making a lot more lactase, and so they're doing fine on dairy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of a confirmation of, okay, you can improve that situation by improving the amount of lactase that your body can make.
Yeah. And don't get pregnant just because of that, though.
I'm going to rush that and get pregnant so I can have a...
High school kids, don't misunderstand what I just said.
Right. There's other things like within hypersensitivity disorders, which can sometimes be confused with autoimmune disorders, elevated estrogen levels can cause exacerbated hypersensitivity to different things. So if you're pregnant, that can, you know, if your problem is not a deficiency in lactase, but you have elevated estrogen levels causing these hypersensitivities to different foods or stresses, then getting pregnant could make you worse.
Right.
Which is why some diseases like cholestasis and other things are diabetically induced pregnancies, or pregnancy-induced diabetes is also kind of a common thing.
Right, and don't misunderstand the fact that we're not saying that all autoimmune issues are these few things that we're talking about here. We're going to get into some more specifics on some other autoimmune issues like Hashimoto's and rheumatoid arthritis and stuff like that in this show. But what we're seeing out there is that a lot of people across a very wide spectrum of autoimmune issues are seeing improvement by correcting their digestion and removing the foods that most often cause the body to go to war against those foods.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Elizabeth.
You still want to talk about?
Yeah, there are some other factors we haven't really mentioned yet, which may or may not come from the questions, but I'll just list them quickly and maybe we'll get into them deeper depending on the questions. But heavy metals can also cause autoimmune responses. They can really just mess with the coating on certain proteins and your own immune system itself. Synthetic chemicals that bind to your own cells can then become seen as foreign, like antigens or things that your body has to attack. Certain medications are known to induce autoimmune diseases.
Right.
And I mentioned some trace element or trace mineral deficiencies. Maybe some that are specifically highlighted usually are like deficiencies in zinc and selenium and copper related to a lot of autoimmune issues, as well as vitamin deficiencies like C, E, B6, some of the other B vitamins, a lot of which the flora are responsible for producing.
Right, so that's two things right there, the trace mineral deficiencies and the vitamin deficiencies. If someone has digestive issues and can't pull those trace minerals or vitamins out of the foods they're eating, then those deficiencies can show up real quick.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So far, One question.
Yeah, exactly.
We've covered one question. Mm-hmm. 20 minutes later.
Mm-hmm. I know.
And man, we're good at this.
Uh-huh, and I'm sitting here thinking about transcribing. Stop talking. Stop saying Okay. Elizabeth from Belmar, New Jersey. Rosacea, psoriasis, IBS, diabetes, ugh, rheumatoid arthritis, list goes on. Hypochondria. No.
Right. So, but there is such a wide variety of things. And you know, this is one thing that kind of makes me so skeptical about so many autoimmune issues is because we see things like rheumatoid arthritis, and it's viewed as an autoimmune issue where the body is attacking its tissues because the immune system had a bad day and it's really mad. So it's just going to attack the body and break it down. But
I like that girl on the phone yesterday.
Yeah, right. Great, she's listening now. Awesome. So, how we view rheumatoid arthritis, not saying that we're right, but we're usually right.
Yeah.
But Will, why don't you explain for people who haven't ever listened to a show before a little bit about anabolic and catabolic states and what the body can do or what it's intended to do in each of those states?
Sure. So in the catabolic state is the oxidizing, car engines on, energy producing, getting stuff done kind of mode that your body should be in during daylight hours. And then around sundown, the body should switch into the more restful, restorative, regenerative, muscle-building state of the anabolic zone, where you get deep sleep and your body's more focused on replenishing its cells and like the car that's in for maintenance. So ideally, that switch happens daily. And if it does, then all sorts of good things happen. Endorphins get released. Your intercellular and intracellular fluids are balanced, and oxygen and CO2 are distributed in the right way. So it kills off all these pathogens and makes your cells healthy and makes them last the appropriate amount of time. So all sorts of good things happen when that's intact.
Right. And the body gets to be rebuilt. You know, we hear all the time that the body, you have a whole new body in a year because every cell just got rebuilt and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, in order for tissues and cells and organs and all those things to be rebuilt in that anabolic nighttime sleeping state, in order for them to be rebuilt, cells and tissues first still have to be broken down. So if they don't get broken down during the day in that catabolic state, there is no rebuilding that happens. And we find that for a lot of different reasons that people can get stuck in one of these states or the other. A lot of times if a person doesn't have enough vitality, the body can't switch back like it's supposed to every day, or a lot of different issues can push a person too far to get stuck in that state at the cellular level where the cells are either too open and permeable or too closed. But if a person is stuck in this catabolic breakdown state all the time, the body starts to break down these tissues like it's supposed to, but since they never move into the anabolic state, that rebuilding phase never shows up. So what shows up is just constant breakdown, tissue breakdown, cellular debris getting peed out and being removed from the body as junk. But without that rebuild, the tissue starts to disintegrate. And what do you see? Ooh, you see arthritis from connective tissue being broken down too far, and ligaments, and all these things that are supposed to function. And a la peanut butter sandwiches, you have some rheumatoid arthritis there. So how do you feel about that?
Oh, it's not nice.
It's not nice, but so if you understand that view, then viewing it like the body is just pissed off and attacking itself it's almost silly to view it that way.
Yeah, like if you were running a marathon and your feet started to get swollen, you wouldn't be like, I have an autoimmune disease.
Yeah, you stop running.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, the catabolic state when you're stuck and it's like, you're constantly working out, your body like is doing that metabolically, and you should expect there to be some inflammation if that's what's going on, because your body's going to start to try to seize the damage and prevent motion in those areas that are really wearing down.
Right. So, and when you see people with rheumatoid arthritis see improvement when they can move themselves into that anabolic state, they haven't done anything to the immune system. They've just put their body in a state where it can rebuild itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of makes me think, yeah, that's not really so autoimmune now, is it?
Yeah.
And other issues are like that too. You know, IBS can have issues where intestinal lining and stuff is being broken down and damaged. But we talk about that a lot in our understanding Crohn's, IBS, chronic diarrhea, stuff like that, mm-hmm. episode.
Mm-hmm.
So listen to that.
Yeah. And she listed a whole bunch of, like, diabetes also, like, there's multiple causes for that. And when we look at type 1, it's a totally different thing than type 2. Although some people may consider that type 1 diabetes as an autoimmune disease. And there's been really strong links between celiacs and type 1, where they've been finding that possible antibodies antibodies that are attacking the pathogens and such that are entering the system because of the celiacs also will end up attacking the insulin-producing cells in the pancreas. So there's been really strong links. In some countries, everyone that comes in for type 1 diabetes like treatment is tested for celiacs.
The really strong thing to understand is that so many things we're going to talk about today, lupus and Hashimoto's, and when you Google link to celiac, they all come up all over the place. They're all linked to celiac. And what is celiac but a situation where a food is causing a response because it's getting into the bloodstream like it shouldn't be, and the body is going to war against, in that scenario, gluten issues. And we've talked on other episodes before about gluten, and I really like to say this now, is that, you know, we don't know that it's actually gluten that is causing the problem. There is some evidence that it's not actually gluten, but other components of those gluten-containing foods. So it's still fine to view it as avoid gluten-containing foods, and that helps you, but if people come along and say, oh, we already discovered it's not gluten, so you can go off your gluten-free diet and go back to eating, you know, wheat bread or whatever you want to have, I don't agree with that.
Yeah. Are you familiar with that term, the FODMAPs or FODM?
Yeah.
Right, so those short-chain carbohydrates that are, I don't want to go into the whole thing, fermentable, ugly, dye, monosaccharide, polypoid, things like that.
That's easy for you to say.
Well, because I wrote it down. But if you look up FODMAPS, you'll see like a whole system, which is pretty much like, all right, so the guy who popularized the gluten-free diet is like, wait, maybe it's not gluten, or maybe it's not only gluten. Then they're like, well, it's something, and that's right. What these other things are, these short-chain carbohydrates that seem to be causing a lot of problems. And there is some more substantiated evidence about gluten being let into the system through this one particular protein inside the intestinal tract called zonulin or something like that, where, I don't know, but the whole ballpark is that a lot of food sensitivities are related to these short-chain carbs on the FODMAP list.
Right, and there's, you know, you see a lot of success happening for people doing, you know, FODMAP diets where they're removing or greatly reducing those foods, from removing all grains, dairy, and legumes, from a diet called the specific carbohydrate diet. So all these foods are just removing a lot of these foods all these diets are removing foods that commonly cause these issues, and people get better. So what's wrong with getting better?
That's good.
Oh, it's good.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
That's good. All right, moving on. Holly from Bethel, Minnesota. Celiac disease. How to prevent my kids from getting it since I have it?
So, you know, people are worried a lot about genetic stuff and hereditary things, and what we see is that a lot of times genetic issues can predispose a body to what it can be susceptible to, but that doesn't mean that there's nothing you can do about it. We see that through correcting how the body is functioning or the foods that you're eating, that you can improve issues even if you have genetic disposition towards that issue. So don't feel like somebody's stuck on something. So to help your kid, first understand what's causing the issues.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty much always digestive issues could have been what started it, but then it's the foods that you're eating and the compounds and proteins that are contained in those foods. So what I explain in Kick Your Fat in the Nuts is how to first fix digestion, then you remove all those trouble-causing foods for 30 to 90 days, and you let that gut lining heal a little bit. You can take other steps to get more nutrients in the body so that it can heal more, things like bone broth people use a lot, because by making bone broth, you're pulling all of those cofactors and trace minerals out of all that connective tissue and the bone marrow and all that that's hard to find in other foods, and you can give your body access to those tools to repair things. But give your body, your intestinal tract, time to heal, and then you can try to reintroduce those foods one at a time. But if they still give you a problem, then don't be stupid. Don't eat them.
Yeah, and as a mother, if they're still of like breastfeeding age, that's been actually a proven thing to help reduce the chances of getting celiac. I don't know if it's related to the bacteria that gets processed through the milk or the immunoglobulins that are processed, like that are received nutritiously through breast milk, but that's been shown to help reduce the incidence of celiac. And then also being cognizant to not kill your kid's flora, like,
yeah,
you know, don't
snuffy nose, I'm gonna put them on antibiotics,
right,
for a week.
Don't go antibiotic crazy. Don't give them water made with chlorine or filtered with chlorine, because you're just gonna wipe out their flora. So try to do things to actively promote their flora health, like give them fermented vegetables. Don't overly sterilize the thing and make sure their water is pure.
Yeah, if a kid has diarrhea issues a lot, that needs to be fixed, because that's going to wipe out gut flora every time. So I think that's important. But if it's a big concern, then first fix it with yourself to where you're symptom-free. People do it every day. And then use those steps with your kids. You're going to eat that way. Allow them to eat that way, too.
All right. Deborah, my husband has spent the last 2 weeks in the hospital with a possible unnamed autoimmune disease triggered by anesthesia. The doctors are stumped by swelling around his spinal cord, causing paralysis after a kidney stone removal surgery. What can trigger autoimmunity?
So, first of all, Deborah, let me say that I have no idea, because that's a pretty random and not that commonly seen, and issues like that could be caused by just about a kajillion things, which is probably why they're stumped. But there is one thought that just kind of jumped in my head, so I'm going to make it come out of my mouth, is that if any type of surgery where you cut the body open and you go in there and you dig around a little bit is very stressful, and it's also very pro-catabolic to the individual at the cellular level, where it kind of can push the person into that breakdown state dramatically. So if a person was already leaning a little too catabolic and then they have surgery, it really can push them into a severely catabolic state. And in that state where the cells are open like that, the potassium leaves the cells and it makes that surrounding environment overly alkaline, because potassium is alkaline, and that can cause some issues. But a main factor is that when all the potassium leaves the cells, sodium goes into the cells, and we know that water follows sodium, which can cause swelling issues. So, I mean, it's possible that he's pushed so far into a catabolic state that the cells are so open and the sodium's going in there and it's causing swelling, and the swelling around the spinal cord is causing the issue. And that is such a shot in the dark, one in a million chances of what's going on, but it's just something that kind of makes sense to me. But again, they're saying that it's a possible autoimmune situation, and I think more often than not, it's an appropriate immune situation. The body is smarter than we give it credit for. So it could be something else going on that is just causing the body to go to war and have a hard time, and that's the reaction that's happening. Will Schmidt, do you think I should get punched in the face for saying
no,
that? Do you
I think
that's wrong?
I'll punch him, though, just for fun.
Just in case. Maybe Kenneth should punch me.
I didn't really have any inclination to punch you because of that.
Oh, there's other stuff.
Yeah.
Right. But,
and
yeah,
I have a list.
If possible, Deborah, if you can do some of the self-tests on your husband to see where his chemistry is at, then maybe you can gain some insight as to what's going on with him. Like, looking at his urine pH and urine specific gravity. Maybe the doctors even know those things already.
Yeah, maybe they've run some tests on urine and it'll, yeah. it'll say your specific gravity right there.
Right. Where his breath rate's at, all those sort of things can help you get a sense of where his chemistry is presently at. But it doesn't seem like a weird thing for a body to do to go through some inflammation after you
dig into it.
Yeah, right. If you cut things out of it.
Right.
I think.
You know, another clue, and this is not a diagnosis or any kind of medical fact or anything, but what we see in urine when someone's super catabolic and just the body's just breaking down tissue left and right is that their urine will be very dark. I mean, you can almost paint the wall with it because it's so full of dead, broken down cells and cellular debris that the body is removing. So if that can be a hint that, oh, maybe that is the case, then there may be steps you can take to help keep him in a less catabolic state, and that might help him heal and repair faster from the surgery.
Yeah, and you could see that too with that urine dipstick test that we sometimes recommend. You could actually detect protein, if there's protein in his urine.
Right. There's 11 parameter dipsticks that you can buy on Amazon and stuff. And you can just dip them in the urine and it kind of shows some things going on. And if protein's very high, that's a confirmation that, okay, the body's breaking down a lot of stuff and it's coming out in the urine. And then in our course and in our books, there's a lot of foods and different supplements and things that a person can do to move themselves less catabolic. Like egg yolks are a great thing if they're not cooked hard, like a runny egg. Egg yolk is a great one.
All right. Christopher, is there a correlation between digestion and the development of CMV? Would Lyme's be considered an autoimmune disease? Is CMV DMV's sister?
No, they're okay. Not. They're not related.
Okay.
And Chris always has hard questions. Why, Chris?
Let's block Chris.
Yeah.
Well, Chris is a trainer, and he uses a lot of stuff that we teach with his clients, and like he gets great results, and so he's smart, and he like knows stuff, and then he knows stuff that I don't know. But let me see what.
I like Chris.
Yeah, he's good. Mm-hmm. So what I can say about this, Chris, is that the first part of the question is, you know, CMV is related to a lot of the herpes virus situations. Ooh. And so I don't really view it as a digestive issue, but we know that if that acid function is missing, then any little bastard that wants to come in can come in the body and set up camp. You know, that acid in the stomach is really a big, huge part of our immune system, really, because it's the first barrier that keeps all the bad guys out for anything that's going to enter in that fashion. Of course, things can enter the body other ways as well. But instead of a digestive issue, I view it more of a inability to fight off viral infections. Because CMV is one of those things that they say can stay latent in the body just like herpes can, like a cold sore kind of virus would. And we talk about this a lot, and we have a cold sores episode. It's called
Tony's Cold Sore. Big Problem.
Cold sores.
I don't get cold sores. I'm not
he's covered on them right now. They're right. Just oozing.
I'm not easy. Okay. That's funny. But when we look at cold sores, Will, do you want to talk about calcium at the tissue level and explain, you know, how that works?
Yeah. Same deal goes with canker sores and debatably even just the common cold, which I think was like the first podcast.
I think it was the second one. Common. Yeah.
So we go way back on this subject. But basically, what we talked about there was the significance of having sufficient calcium in the tissues to help not only like give structure to the cell, but also to activate the immune response within cells. Because when there's deficient calcium levels, the virus can just come in and set up shop and take over and proliferate. And there's a big problem that a lot of people have, especially with the modern diet, in getting enough calcium, and even more importantly, keeping the calcium at the tissue level. So we may eat tons of calcium, but we also may eat like a bunch of carbohydrates and sugars and
liquid sugars, like soda.
And tons of fluids fortified with vitamin D and those kind of things, both of which, the sugars, starches, and vitamin D, all pull calcium out of the tissues. So that makes us more susceptible to those viral invaders. Right.
Another problem could be vitamin D. You know, yeah. We're told to take these huge amounts of vitamin D nowadays, and it's so, so wrong for so, so many people. And it's not that vitamin D isn't necessary. It absolutely is. We need vitamin D to be able to pull calcium in from the intestinal tract. So it's vital, but when you have too much vitamin D, you're not only pulling it in from the intestinal tract, you're pulling it out of all the tissues. And when it's not in the tissues, the immune system can't be triggered to attack. The calcium has to be there in the tissues to trigger the immune system to work. So if you think about it, Chris, that if someone's digestion isn't working and they can't pull calcium out of the food, and then that calcium can't exist in the tissue level, then yes, digestive issues could have been an underlying cause there. But I view it more as just the calcium issue. As far as the second part, is Lyme considered an autoimmune disease? I don't think it is. I hear people saying that it's not, and you know, we view it as a viral issue or tick juice problem, if some people want to call it that. But a lot of the problems that it causes are viewed as autoimmune responses. So I think a lot of the issues that people deal with are the same issues that people are dealing with all of these autoimmune type issues. So that may cause some confusion there, but I don't think I view it as an autoimmune or even what people consider autoimmune issues. So maybe your next question is going to be even harder.
Start thinking them up right now, Chris. Okay, so Jamie, my 14-year-old son has had Bell's 4 times. Every lab, MRI, CAT scan has been normal, and he has seen specialist after specialist. It's not Lyme's. My gut tells me it's environmental. 3 times on the left side, 1 time on the right. Thoughts on the 7th cranial nerve kicking in the nuts?
Yeah, Jamie, so it makes sense that all of his scans...
What's Bell's?
Bell's palsy. Oh, so it's kind of like this, when a part of your face or your face kind of gets some paralysis or it's
I've seen that kind of stuff.
So usually when there's a cause like Lyme's or some of these other issues that cause, I think Will can go into them some. But when they don't find anything, then they just call it Bell's palsy.
I thought that was just a constant thing. Like, it just comes and goes, Bell's palsy?
Yeah. Okay. It usually doesn't stay that long, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So, I like the way that you're viewing it as environmental, because everybody says that it can be triggered by all of these stress issues. And that makes sense when, you know, the body is having to put all these resources towards stress, and then it can't fight off some of the underlying causes. Weren't you saying like viral issues and stuff like that?
Yeah, like they can check and see if you have Lyme's disease antibodies to determine whether or not Lyme's may be the causative factor. And it sounds like you've already ruled that out, which is awesome. There are other viral strains that can also cause that, like different forms of herpes viruses that may be continually reactivated, in which case it would make sense to listen to our episode on cold sores so you can learn what to do in general to safeguard yourself against viruses. But the main thing that's probably causing the virus is probably not the the direct cause of the Bell's palsy. The usual direct cause has to do with inflammation within the little bony tube that the facial nerve runs through. And viruses can cause that indirectly by your immune response to their infection. So taking steps to reduce your viral load or susceptibility to viruses can really help. But you also want to look at other potential causes of inflammation. So you can look at the whole catabolic issue that we were talking about before, or pH imbalances, electrolyte disturbances, those kind of things, as well as just like overall weak digestion of maybe he's not, your immune system isn't really strong in your gut, so you're getting these inflammatory responses. And they may be systemic, but they may just be really noticed where they're causing the most problem.
And inflammation could even be caused by foods that you're eating and an inability to process those foods, and removing all of the foods that we talked about before would be a nice test to see if that improved it. But we also see people talking about this, you know, showing up when a person has like a minor cold or stress or all these things. And so if a person, if this is caused by a virus, which we're not saying it is, but if it can be, then the body may be fighting off that virus just fine. But if another cold shows up, or another stress, or some other situation where the body has to move resources towards that problem, then the virus that's latent in the body can then become active and cause the problem. So it can be a matter of removing the stresses or finding ways to give the body more resources.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to speed this up. We're running out of time.
Two shows. Ah, the transcribing. Amber from Clare, Michigan. Can Kenna come cook me some AIP whole food? Well, if you get me a ticket. Why does eating AIP help my stupid gallbladder? Also, I was kind of wondering if I could borrow some helicopter socks. Totally unrelated, but thought I should ask.
Yes, on the socks, of course. Don't be silly, Amber. My socks are your socks. And eating AIP is removing paleo AIP. You're removing grains, and it just seems that a lot of grains can cause issues with thickening the bile flow, so it doesn't flow as well, and that's going to cause the gallbladder issues. So by removing those foods, it helps bile flow better, and then those stones can start to disintegrate and not cause so many problems. Amber, go.
Oh, are we done with Amber?
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, we got to rock some of
all
these
right,
out.
All right. Mama Carol, why are the hypo to hyper swings so drastic for Hashimoto's patients, and what can be done to ease these frequent swings?
Well, this is kind of interesting because you see so many people that will get diagnosed as bipolar when they have Hashimoto's, or they'll get diagnosed with Hashimoto's if they're bipolar. And so, you know, we did an episode that we talked about bipolar a lot. I don't remember what it was called. Maybe it was
understanding bipolar.
But it seems like we had other mental issues in there or something. I'll find the name. We're going to put it on the show notes. So when we have a show, you can go to kickitinthenuts.com and click on radio show, and then you'll find a link for show topics and show notes. And then if we talked about a link or something in a show, then you can find it there. So we'll put the link to the bipolar show on there. But, you know, a lot of times when we see thyroid issues like Hashimoto's, and Hashimoto's can be different than other thyroid issues, and Hashimoto's is viewed as an autoimmune issue where the thyroid gland is being broken down and damaged and can't function correctly, which, you know, in this scenario, that may be the case, and I can't say that I know. I don't think anybody can say they really know, but we see that there can also be other issues going on that are affecting thyroid function. And we also see people improving this issue on the AIP protocol. And so it just seems like any issue where your body's going to war can cause problems to specific organs for different people for different reasons. I have no idea what the question was. Oh, the swings from. So we see people talking about the swings from hypo to hyperthyroidism. And, you know, we also see swings in people's moods when their resources go up and down drastically, which is very common for someone who has low minerals and has
Hypoglycemia,
where the insulin is very powerful. So when they eat carbohydrates, their sugar spikes, good times, but then all this insulin comes out and drives way too much sugar out, crashes hard, and then you're yelling at people on the phone or in traffic for no reason. So this is very common. So when this happens, doesn't it make sense that the body would try and pull in some backup support, you know? So when sugar crashes that hard, the body could make other hormones spike up to try and help the body function, or just stop this person from yelling at people for no reason. So a lot of times we want to blame the organ that's going up and down and back and forth, but maybe it's the problem is that the body is just trying to utilize that organ to help make up for another deficiency elsewhere. You look like you want to say something, Will Schmidt.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen lots of people that put these practices to use of looking at their digestion and their body chemistry and doing their best to balance out the you know, all the points of homeostasis that we talk about, like your electrolyte levels, your metabolic rate, your cell membrane health, and also getting your body chemistry balanced so you can absorb all the nutrients that you need. Like if your pHs aren't balanced, you just won't pick up enough iodine and your thyroid won't be able to run right. When you don't have good protein metabolism, you lack nitrogen, so your whole endocrine system is kind of screwed. And if you take the effort to try to get all those systems go, a lot of times we see the whole metabolic rate and the thyroid function level out. And all of a sudden, oh, did I have Hashimoto's or did I just not have what my body needed?
Right. And we're going to talk about this a lot more, so don't think we're done with Hashimoto's. We had a lot of questions on them, though.
Mm-hmm. Julie, how could a 9-year-old boy develop Hashimoto's disease? Wrong age, wrong gender. Is it only for girls?
What? It's not only for girls, but it's just mostly mean girls.
Mm. Mean girls?
Yeah, no, not really mean girls.
Oh, I thought you said mean girls.
Huh?
I thought you said mean girls.
I said mostly in girls.
Oh, okay.
I thought you said mean too.
Yeah.
So it can happen in men, but yeah, a 9-year-old boy, that's really odd, and I don't have an answer for that. But, you know, when you look at any thyroid issue, We all look at iodine. We understand, okay, iodine can be a player in that issue because the thyroid needs iodine to function correctly. But iodine is the hardest mineral to absorb. And when pHs are all out of whack, the body can't absorb iodine correctly. And so people will supplement iodine and nothing happens and that doesn't fix anything. And there's also a lot of experts out there that I like that say that supplementing with iodine can actually exacerbate Hashimoto's to where it can help other thyroid issues. I don't know that for a fact, but a lot of people with thyroid issues, if they can just balance out their pHs so that the body can absorb iodine on its own, a lot of times those issues can improve. The other thing I would want to know is if he's having an actual autoimmune type, finger quote, thyroid issue, would removing all those foods and removing the war from his body remove that organ from being attacked? And I think that's worth trying.
All right. Michelle, so I'm doing the Kick Your Fat book and course and found out I have celiac disease in May. Haven't lost any weight, cutting out all the simple carbs and gluten, and was counting calories except late at night I'd start craving sugar and peanut butter. So I will have a spoonful that turns into 3 or 4. I've basically been eating low carb except the peanut butter and occasional rice or crackers once or twice a month. And combined with all the other issues, it seems like the weight is holding on for dear life. So what the heck do I do?
So we talked to Michelle in the group a little bit after this and asked some follow-up questions and realized that she had lost her gallbladder. And she was using some ox bile but hadn't taken steps to fix the other digestive aspects, which can be important when you've lost your gallbladder. Because not only are you not breaking down food and that food is not turning into nutrients that your body needs and can keep you from craving all those sugars at night when you did so well eating perfectly all day and you find yourself through a pint of, you know, chubby hubby ice cream at night. So if you can get those nutrients through proper digestion, but also all the food you're eating doesn't turn to toxins and get stored in fat cells, and that's a problem. And so a celiac is just, to me, it's a confirmation that digestion was not working well at some point. And so those foods that didn't get broken down well or some other food that caused intestinal permeability issues made that gluten-containing foods a factor for that person.
Yeah, and I think you want to really look at, like, the intestinal tract and, like, what are you trying to do, like, when you have celiac disease? And, like, you think about, okay, so we look at, was it just gluten or was it these particular food map things or whatever it is? And if you kind of look at it as a system, as a whole, kind of like if you were a farmer, when you're looking at the health of your soil, you're going to look at, like, well, did I pour bleach on the soil?
Right.
Or, you know, did I spray pesticides on it for years? Like, did I kill all the microorganisms in there? Did I totally imbalance the pH by drinking chlorine or not having bile to neutralize acid? Like, there's some serious things that we are unwittingly doing to damage our intestinal tract. And you want to look at, what are those things? Am I still doing them? Like, am I still drinking and acid or chlorine
or grains.
Right.
Yeah.
Or is my do I have enough stomach acid to like sterilize my food and kill all these pathogens as they enter my body, or am I just swallowing a bunch of parasites and nematodes and they're just ripping through my intestines?
Right.
So you want, is your stomach acid on point? Is your bile flowing well, which obviously in this case it wasn't because she had it removed because there's gallstones. Because if you're not neutralizing the acid from your stomach, then that acid's going to burn your intestinal tract and ta-da, like celiacs. So
right.
You want to look at those factors and try to fix them. And what's awesome about the intestinal tract is that it heals super quick, like your tongue. Like you bite your tongue, it's like that kind of...
Right, but the problem is it doesn't heal if you're in a war.
Right.
So you have to first stop the war, yeah. Fix digestion so that all the... things that are coming in are not evil,
yeah.
And then it can heal.
Is yeah. that why diabetic patients usually, they don't heal fast because their body's like at war right now or trying to fix everything else?
You know, think about what bacteria feeds on, and that's sugar.
Oh.
And a diabetic is like a walking popsicle to every bacteria that walks by.
I'm just
going to
live a diabetic the next
right,
time
so
I see them.
If you're bacteria, you want to live in a diabetic, which is why all the mosquitoes go to the diabetic too, because they know that sugar's in there and that's what they want.
Yeah.
So that can be one
mosquitoes
issue.
Mosquitoes start swarming, I'm going to be like, oh crap.
Right. So that can be one of those problems that they have a lot of time healing, a lot of the problems that they're having.
Yeah. And it does, you have to like let that whole war calm down. But I guess what I was trying to point out is you also want to look at what are the fundamental things that I need to work on to correct the cause of the damage in the first place. Am I doing that part yet?
Right.
In addition to avoiding those trigger foods for a while.
Right.
Oh, one other question about, you keep mentioning the chlorine in the water. If you have like a Brita, if you're filtering out, does it still have chlorine in the water?
Yes, it doesn't filter out enough of it.
Yeah, I don't know how good Brita. I know that I have a great filter that pulls it out. I know you can find filters that pull out
reverse
chlorine.
Osmosis filters will pull it out, but most of the little carbon ones pull out some. But
not enough.
Quite
okay. Yeah.
All right, let's get it cranking. We only got a few minutes
All left. Right. Anna, how does a poor digestive system affect my thyroid? My doctor wants me to take meds for my mild hypothyroid issue. I'm only just beginning this program and have seen how my digestive issues have affected my general health, cholesterol, weight gain, etc. Could it be the cause of hypothyroidism as well?
You know, one thing with digestion, with issues like that, is that inflammation can actually suppress the conversion of the T4 to T3 hormone, which is, in the thyroid, the T4 is not an active hormone. It has to be converted to T3 to be active, and then that makes everything function. But inflammation can restrict that from happening. Inflammation can also cause the thyroid receptor sites to be resistant, which is kind of like insulin resistance in a type 2 diabetic. So if those receptor sites are not functioning, then it doesn't matter what kind of hormones you have in the thyroid, can't function right. And it can also depress the pituitary function. So there's a lot of issues that inflammation can cause to the thyroid function itself. And eating the wrong foods or an inability to break down those foods can be a big factor in inflammation. So yes, that can cause that.
Mm-hmm. As well as, like, if you're just undernourished in general because you're not digesting foods powerfully, whether
right.
they're trigger foods or not, if you don't have enough nitrogen from protein because you don't have, either you don't need enough protein or you don't have stomach acid to break it down, or if your blood pressure overall is low and your body just has low resources to work with, then your endocrine system and your thyroid is going to appropriately ease off the gas and slow down to try to preserve what little resources you do have.
Sure.
Susan, I was diagnosed with SLE, lupus, in 2004. Every time my ANA antibodies are checked, they are very high, usually over 1,000, when they should be in the 60 to 150 range. So literally, my body is kicking itself around. How does that relate as immunity problems go with weight loss?
So Susan, one thing that would be great for you to listen to is our weight loss plateau episode. I think it was a two-part episode that we have, and we talk a lot in that episode about how burdens on the body can restrict weight loss and can cause weight gain, because a lot of problems for the body and toxins and food that was good but didn't get digested and so is now is toxic can get stored in fat cells and can cause a person to expand. So if your body is going to war, which it is with lupus, then that's going to be a huge burden on the body and can really cause weight loss to be a difficult situation. But just like these other autoimmune issues that we've talked about, there are people out there improving their lupus conditions by improving digestion and by removing the trouble foods. So I think it's worth trying and then seeing, does this allow the burden to come down on my body so that I can lose weight more easily?
Yeah, I mean, if you're given a diagnosis like that, it'd be really interesting to see what would happen if you did the work to, like, fix your stomach acid and your bile flow and restore health to your intestinal flora and get all the trace minerals that you need, and then just see what happens, you know?
Right.
Like, if all of a sudden everything was as supported as it could be, see if, like, your conditions improve or possibly completely recover.
Yeah, and what's fun is that you're not the first person trying this. It's fun that there are other people out there that have done this and have had success, and there's a lot, you know? So if nothing else, you can at least improve your health in some way, and improving health is a great way to lose some body fat, too.
All right, Kaylin, alopecia areata. This may sound weird. I had a patch of hair missing on my head. I got stung by a wasp on that spot. In less than a week, my hair was growing back. First time having all my hair on my head in 10 years. Is it a coincidence with the wasp?
I love this.
That is rad.
This is so awesome.
Start stinging people's head with wasps.
So wasp therapy?
Yeah, it really is. And I think it absolutely is not a coincidence, because to go 10 years without any hair in that one little spot, and then all of a sudden get stung by a wasp. It's either has to do with each other, or it wasn't a wasp, it was a leprechaun, and you got your wish finally. But, you know, what this makes me think about is that, like, things like snake venom, and, like, there's people that are using now, like, scorpion venom to, like, improve all of these health issues in one way or another. So it kind of makes me wonder, you know, what was there some type of viral issue or some type of issue at that cellular level in that part of your scalp, and then some kind of wasp toxin comes in and wipes out whatever that was. You know, who knows? I'm completely making stuff up right now, but it's fun because it's just kind of awesome that that happened, and it kind of makes you think. You know, they're even talking about snake venom with cancer therapy now, and so you just have to assume that with an issue like that, it's not something where the body's just attacking itself for no reason. Something is going on. The wasp didn't come in and just convince the body not to attack itself on that spot on your head. It's something else.
So instead of chemo, now everybody's getting like snakes on them and just sitting there getting bit.
Right. Yeah. You know, and a long time ago, you know, people used snake venom to treat issues, and they had success with it. And I can't remember the book I read this in, but there was a story about how the pharmaceutical companies found that they were losing sales because these snake venom things were doing this. So they started this big campaign calling quacks snake oil salesmen. And so now that is synonymous with things that are fake, that don't really help.
Wow.
But it's just people making money. And so now they call them snake oil. And now, you know, 100 years later or whatever, people are back to actually using snake venom to fix things again.
Yeah,
so
awesome.
I've never used snake venom. I don't know anything about what it can be used for, how it works or anything like that. You just see people having success with things like that. And when, you know, Kaylin can fix his troubles with a wasp sting, then something's up.
I'm going to walk in someday. You're going to have all these snakes and wasps in here. Yeah. And some butterflies.
Well, one of our favorite scientists, Emmanuel Ravici, did a lot of studies with the pH reactions and the anabolic catabolic responses to cuts and lesions and things like that. And one thing we usually see with hair loss is a catabolic imbalance, and maybe somehow this bug pushed the venom pushed him to be in an anabolic state.
At that tissue
yeah,
level,
possibly,
something
yeah.
Was, yeah.
Who knows what it was.
It's so interesting. Yeah. So the answer is no clue, but that's really cool.
Right. And we're going to start a multi-level marketing for snake oil.
Right. Trina from Surrey, British Columbia,
last
Canada.
Last question. Woo woo.
Woohoo. Once you begin to recover, how long does it take? I've been on the specific carbohydrate diet for life for 3 weeks, using Aloe Elite, which has helped tremendously, and taking a supplement called Cell Food, which has helped with arthritis swelling considerably. Now that I feel like I'm on the path to recovery, I'm frustrated by how slowly the improvements come. P.S. My autoimmune disorders were precipitated by the Twinrix vaccine 6 years ago. Since then, I've had a subtotal colectomy and been diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, spondyloarthritis, yeah, non-celiac gluten enteropathy, and all the wonderful side benefits like anemia, weight loss, and depression.
Mm. So, first of all, Trina, if you're on the carbohydrate diet for life plan, 3 weeks is not for life. you gotta stick around. But there's a lot of stuff to look at here with Trina. Let's not do the vaccine stuff because we'll be here for another whole episode. But that
we
is interesting.
We should do that. Have we done podcasts about vaccines?
No, we haven't, because I'm afraid I would just yell the whole time.
We might get chased after too.
Right. But you know, a lot of things are interesting. Is that, you know, you have all of these issues, ulcerative colitis. All these things are digestive issues, but you also have anemia. You can't hold on weight, and you're depressed, and all of those are issues that we see from improper digestion.
The weight I really don't see as an issue. Well, I see as a blessing.
Yeah, blessing. But for a lot of people, it sucks. People like me and Will, we used to get real mad when we couldn't add any weight. Yeah, yeah.
Wah, wah.
Whatever. One thing you want to do is that you're seeing improvement with this specific carbohydrate diet. And I'm not familiar with the supplements you're using, but my assumption is that the diet that you're using is really helping bring down the inflammation, because the specific carbohydrate diet removes a lot of those trouble grains. But a big thing that I like to tell people a lot of times is that, you know, someone learns, they've been in this medical community for a long time, and the rule is you take a pill and 4 hours later everything is fixed. Yeah, I have a bunch of side effects, but at least I fixed the problem and it took me 4 hours. But the body and correcting things naturally, it does not work that way at all. So you have to remove yourself from that, I'm going to fix everything in 4 hours mentality, because all these problems did not happen in 4 hours. I mean, your list is substantial. It's like almost like you're showing off a little bit with all this stuff. So you're seeing improvement. Focus on that. Understand how awesome that is. It's probably the first time you've seen improvement since you've been dealing with these issues. So be super excited and give your body time to continue doing that. Now, there are things that could speed it up, though, like improving digestion and improving your mineral resources. As long as you're depressed, things are not fixed. As long as you have anemia, things are not fixed. So take our free 4-week digestion course so that you can pinpoint which digestive issues are the most relevant to you.
Relevant.
And then it shows you how to fix them and learn how to fix them and take the steps to fix digestion while you're removing the foods that are causing the war. And then you got a good formula for some jazzy stuff to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So let's refresh or let's review real quick. What did we learn?
I want to go over the main points, like some of the most common contributing factors. That, not to say this is a complete list or that this is your case, but there's a lot of autoimmune issues that start with faulty digestion and issues with food not being processed correctly or the intestinal tract getting damaged, either because of particular foods you chose or weird chemical pesticides or heavy metals or improper basic digestive function, like not enough stomach acid or not enough good bile flow. And once that intestinal tract is compromised and you're no longer getting the nutrition that you need, but rather being poisoned by a lot of the foods that you eat because you're not processing them correctly, your body starts to try to deal with that whole situation. And it's also it doesn't have all the resources it needs to function properly. And that's usually the source of a lot of these different issues.
Right. So it's okay if your doctor is telling you that your body is attacking itself. And there's, you know, for some issues, it very well may be. But if your body's at war and you can remove the things that are causing this war, why not just try it? It's a month out of your life. You've been suffering for a long time in most cases. Why not just take a month and do some things that may not be your favorite thing to do? You may be very upset to lose your bagel, but you're going to be more upset to continue dealing with the issue for a lifetime. So why not just try it out? So you can find that in Chapter 9, the steps to take to remove all the trouble foods. You can learn how to fix your digestion in chapter 3 of Kick Your Fat in the Nuts. And you can get the audio book for free now by going to kickitonthenuts.com/audiobook. Yeah. So take the steps to learn what's going to work for you, but just understand that you can create improvement by removing the burden that your body is dealing with. I think that was it.
What you got, Kenna? I've got a little something here. Today's show is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook. Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And if you want to learn more about how to look at your own chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the free 4-week digestion course at kickitinthenuts.com. Or you can head over to Will's page for mybodyofknowledge.net and check out all his fun stuff he's got over there.
He's fancy over there. Uh-huh. And if you heard anything that you like, please go back to iTunes and leave us a review. That really helps us spread the word. I think next week we're going to cover laryngitis because we haven't covered that, and I know a couple of things about that.
All right, cool.
Bye-bye.
Bye.